Let's take your seats again. And turn with me, if you would, to Colossians chapter 2. So there are little baskets under your seats, and those baskets are Bibles. Oh, there are also visitor cards. If you're visiting with us, if you have a chance to fill out the card and drop it in the little box at the very back, that would be great. But the Bibles, if you turn to page 572 of those Bibles, you will find Colossians chapter 2. So we've taken a bit of a recess from Colossians for a while. Try as I might to move rapidly through Colossians, it just doesn't seem to work. So it gets kind of intense, and we spend a lot of time on a little piece of ground. So we gave you a break. We looked at Hezekiah and prayer for a few weeks. But we're back to Colossians this morning. And we'll in a moment we'll read verses 8 through 15. We'll be focusing on verse 8. So Colossians, Paul was in prison, probably in Rome. While he was there, he was visited by Epaphras, a church planter from Colossae in today's Turkey. And Paul had never visited this church, but this church was established as an outgrowth of his missionary efforts there a few years earlier. But now the church is troubled by false teachers, and Epaphras has come to Paul in Rome for help. What shall I do? Well, they discuss it, and Paul writes a letter to the church, which will be hand-delivered by Tychicus. Now, the writing of the letter really springs from the errors of the false teachers. It's not entirely clear what those fundamental what their full teaching was. The fundamental errors are pretty clear because he addresses them one by one. Scholars have suggested an innumerable amount of theories as to what the Colossian error was. But it's kind of inconclusive. In chapter 2, Paul tackles the salient issues, and we'll be talking about those a bit. And they're clear enough, even if we don't know the precise identity of what these false teachers were teaching as a whole. So in a minute, we'll read verses 8 through 15, where Paul is warning against false teaching. The problem with this false teaching is that it replaces Christ with my human achievements. The solution to the false teaching is to re-center Christianity on Christ. Now, Colossians 2, 8 through 15 is, well, it's like a toboggan run. You jump on at verse 8 and you go faster and faster the farther you go, and the problem is the hillside just becomes a blur. And what are the sights on this downhill ride? Well, we see a view of Christ, and we see a view of how Christ saves me, and we understand what Christ's role is in my life today, and we see Christ as my hope for tomorrow. Well, honestly, for Christians, this is our meat and drink. These are survival skills for the Christians. So if you're going to hike in the mountains, you need to know how to start a fire, and you need to know how to purify the water, and you need to be able to find north. So in the next several sermons, we're going to replay our ride and slow it down, and we'll review frame by frame so that we can take away these critical lessons from our ride. So today it'll just be verse 8, but let's read this section. See to it that no one takes you captive by philosophy and empty deceit, according to the human tradition, according to the elemental spirits of the world, and not according to Christ. For in him the whole fullness of deity dwells bodily, and you have been filled in him who is the head of all rule and authority. In him also you were circumcised with a circumcision made without hands by putting off the body of the flesh by the circumcision of Christ, having been buried with him in baptism, in which you were also raised with him through faith in the powerful working of God who raised him from the dead. And you who were dead in your trespasses and the uncircumcision of your flesh, God made alive together with him, having forgiven us all our trespasses, by canceling the record of debt that stood against us with its legal demands. This he set aside, nailing it to the cross. He disarmed the rulers and authorities and put them to open shame by triumphing over them in him. So, Colossians 2:8. The Colossians are at risk. He starts by saying, see to it. We could translate that, beware. Look out, be on your guard. Look out for what? Well, there are deviants from the faith. There are these false teachers, and they're promulgating another version of Christianity. It's not what you have been taught. Just a verse before this, verse 7, speaking of Christ, just as you were taught. But these false teachers come with a different gospel. And it's tricky stuff because it seems so plausible, so logical. Back to verse 4. I say this in order that no one may delude you with plausible arguments. And the danger that the Colossians faced is so similar to what we face because many false teachers are on the loose today. In other words, the point is that not all Christian teaching is Christian. Not all gospel-centered churches are. Look out so that no one takes you captive. Look out so that no one takes you away as plunder, as the spoils of war. False teachers want to get more disciples. False teachers want to have more supporters. False teachers want to have larger attendance at their gatherings, more likes on their Facebook page. And you are at risk of becoming just one of their statistics, a captive. Sometimes it's even like a member of a cult, which is easier to get into than to get out of. The danger is that then you'll no longer be thinking straight or truthfully or hopefully. How could this happen? Well, see to it that no one takes you captive by philosophy and empty deceit. Those are the tactics, the stuff that makes so much sense. So through philosophy, and there's nothing wrong with philosophy, it's just systematized human thinking, but through their philosophy and empty deceit, empty read vain, contentless, hollow deceit. Interestingly, shortly in the next verse, Paul will talk about, for in him the whole, for in Jesus, the whole fullness of deity dwells bodily, and you have been filled, so that same fullness that dwells in Christ will be applied to you. But this teaching is empty. There's no fullness. There's nothing. It's a vacuum. It makes so much sense, but there's nothing there for you for today or for tomorrow. So the problem isn't the fact that it's philosophy, but that it is what it is a philosophy of, or what it is according to, by philosophy and empty deceit, according to human tradition, according to the elemental spirits of the world, and not according to Christ. In other words, the arguments are logical, but the starting point, the foundation, is faulty. Therefore, this teaching is delusive. Verse 4, I say this in order that no one may delude you with plausible arguments. And this teaching is deceptive. Verse 8, no one takes you captive by philosophy and empty deceit. It can lead you astray. It's not what it appears. It promises far more than it can deliver. So this is a false teaching with a faulty foundation. The Colossians are at risk, and this is a false teaching with a faulty foundation. So look at the basis for the logic, the arguments, the philosophy. What is it according to? It's according to human tradition. Tradition is what's passed on to us, what is handed down to us, whether orally or in writing. And it can be good. 2 Thessalonians 2:15, so then, brothers, stand firm and hold to the traditions that you were taught by us, either by our spoken word or by our letter. These were traditions from God delivered via the apostles. But this tradition that we is talking about here is a tradition not from God, but solely from human origin. This is what we've always done. This is what grandpa did. This is what our ancestors did. This is what Jesus objected to in Mark chapter 7 and verse 8, where he speaks of the Pharisees and their emphasis on their pile of traditions about washing hands to avoid ritual uncleanness. Jesus said, "You leave the commandment of God and you hold to the tradition of men." This is what we've always believed. This is what we've always practiced. And that becomes more important than what God says. This tradition, then, became a starting point for the teacher's conception of Christianity. And the fact is that traditions are a challenge for us today. Depending on your religious background, the traditions that you come from seem to hold so much weight, influence us so much. And so we have a respect for and a fascination with ancient and historical traditions, and there are churches who for centuries have taught things that are not according to Christ. And you get acclimated to the tradition, and it feels so right, but the ancientness of traditions doesn't validate them or make them truthful. The question is, does this tradition, is it according to the Bible? Is it according to Christ? And then there's another sort of human tradition. It's pragmatism, simply what works. And so Christianity that builds on marketing principles can build a big church, a large following, just by observing basic human principles of marketing. We're not against marketing, but it's what and how. Giving people what they want, getting the message out in an attractive presentation, identify and ride the trends, but numerical success doesn't validate the teaching. And so, one faulty foundation for false teaching is human tradition, another is this according to elemental principles of the world. Well, folks, this is a bit obscure. Interpreters vary a great deal in their understandings of what this means. I'll suggest that it is better taken as elementary principles of the world as opposed to elementary spirits of the world. But what is this? Well, this phrase is used four times in the Bible, and let's look at them real quickly. One is further down in the same chapter, verse 20, Colossians 2:20. If with Christ you died to the elemental spirits of the world, why, as if you were still alive in the world, do you submit to regulations? Do not handle, do not taste, do not touch. Referring to things that all perish as they are used according to human precepts and teachings. This seems to be then a focus on regulation, a rules orientation. In other words, this is all about don't. Don't handle, don't taste, don't touch. So it's a religion that is about rules and rules alone. And the more I don't do, the better I am. Look how good I am. I don't do all that stuff. And the more God will be pleased with me and with my discipline and my otherworldly orientation. And Paul says, why, if you died with Christ to this spirit, are you still living that way? All about don't. Two more places that it's used, back in Galatians chapter 4, page 566 in these Bibles. Galatians 4, verses 3 and 4. In the same way, and so in Galatians, the false teaching is a little clearer. It was Jews who tried to impose Old Testament laws on Christians. And so he is speaking out against that. So Galatians 4, 3, in the same way, we also, when we were children, were enslaved to the elementary principles of the world. But when the fullness of time had come, God sent forth his Son, born of woman, born under the law, to redeem those who were under the law, so that we might receive adoption as sons. Enslaved to the elementary principles of the world equals under the law. And the Son redeems those who were under the law, wherein my religion consists of do and don't do. And the better I do and don't do, the better I am. One more. Galatians 4, 8 through 10, just a little further down here. Formerly, when you did not know God, you were enslaved to those that by nature are not gods, enslaved. But now that you have come to know God, or rather to be known by God, how can you turn back again to the weak and worthless elementary principles of the world, whose slaves you want to be once more? You observe days and months and seasons and years. He speaks of these elementary principles of the world as weak and worthless. So when you were under the Jewish law, you were enslaved. Do, don't. It's the only way God can be pleased with you. But now that God knows you, don't turn back to that. The weak and worthless elementary principles of the world. Let me add the perspective of Romans 8, verses 3 and 4 on this. Here, for God has done what the law, weakened by the flesh, here's our weak again, for God has done what the law, weakened by the flesh, could not do by sending his Son in the likeness of sinful flesh, and for sin, he condemned sin in the flesh, in order that the righteous requirement of the law might be fulfilled in us. So Paul says that when you were under the law and you were expecting to be pleasing to God by virtue of what you do and what you don't do, how well you obey the law, when you were under the law, it was so hopeless. And therefore God sent his Son to do what the law couldn't do. The law couldn't make you pleasing to God, not because there is a problem with the law. The law is holy, and the commandment is righteous and good. There's not a problem with the law. The problem is in me. The law, for God has done what the law, weakened by the flesh, could not do. The law can't make me pleasing to God. And the problem, the weak link in the chain, is me. The law is weakened through the flesh. Because I say, look, I want God to be pleased with me. I want to end up with a home in heaven. I want God's smile upon me. And so I'm going to keep the law. And within 15 minutes, I'm breaking the law. Because I'm in the flesh. Because I'm sinful, because even though I say I want to keep God's law, I go off track here and there again and again. And therefore God sends his Son to do what the law, weakened by my flesh, could never do. I could never be pleasing to God because I'm a sinner. Fundamentally, at the root of everything, I am a sinner. And so God sends his Son to do, to save, to rescue me, because I couldn't ever rescue myself. Well, okay, where are you going, Bart? Here we go. Colossians 2:8. So What does this, according to the elemental spirits of the world or the elementary principles of the world, what does this mean? It means natural religion. It means religion apart from Christ. Conscience tells me, the voice of God within, tells me that I sin. There's a right and the wrong, and it tells me, like, that was wrong. And you need to change, and you need to do good. And so every religion in the world reflects this. There's a morality, there's a right and a wrong, and I need to do good. I need to do good so God will be pleased with me. So what do religious people do apart from the God of the Bible, apart from Christ? They work very hard to do good, to be good, so that God will accept them. This is human religion. These are the basics of religion apart from Christ. This is self-help. You can do it. You can remake yourself. And so the false teachers in Colossae and the false teachers today build on this basic human approach to religion. They spin it out, but it's according to human tradition and according to natural religion, the elementary principles of the world. But it's not true Christianity. It leaves Christ out. We can't do enough good because we are sinners and we want to sin. But you'll tell me, Bart, you know, I know of an alcoholic who stopped drinking cold turkey. He's never returned to drink. He's been dry for years. So how can you say that we can't overcome sins on our own and become a better person? Well, I'm telling you, I am completely happy for the alcoholic who overcame his addiction to alcoholism. I am happy for every drug addict who turned his life around. But I don't think that this means that that person has now abandoned sin as the love of his life and has now made God his central motivation in life. Has he turned away from anger? Has he turned away from lust? Has he turned away from selfish ambition? Has he turned away from lying and deceit? Has he turned away from manipulating others to achieve his own ends? Has he turned away from a selfish focus and absorption with himself? That's the here and now of his life. And that doesn't even address his past sins. But who removes them? Who atones for them? How does this man become pleasing to God? Well, Colossians 2:8, look out. Look out so that nobody takes you captive by plausible logic. According to merely human tradition, according to natural religion, these approaches to Christianity will not make you pleasing to God. They will not save you. 2 Corinthians 11:3, I'm afraid that as the serpent deceived Eve by his cunning, your thoughts will be led astray from a sincere and pure devotion to Christ. So our Christianity must be based on Christ. Well, a little bit more about false teachers. 1 Timothy, and since it's about false teachers, I guess we need to say something about them. 1 Timothy 4, 1 through 3, just a couple of additional notes here. This is page 576. There's a lot about false teachers in the New Testament because it's a very real and present danger. Now, the Spirit expressly says that in later times, some will depart from the faith by devoting themselves to deceitful spirits and teachings of demons through the insincerity of liars whose consciences are seared, who forbid marriage and require abstinence from foods that God created to be received with thanksgiving. So they will depart from the faith, these false teachers, and they will devote themselves to deceitful spirits and the teachings of demons, because Satan has every interest in deceiving people. And Satan can't keep everyone from religion, because to be human means to have an inward yearning for God, an awareness of transcendence, an ongoing search for meaning. There must be more to life than this. But Satan is oh so happy with false religions that lead us away from God and Christ and true salvation. It says that for these, their consciences are seared, they're cauterized to stop the pain, to stop the bleeding, no longer sensitive to the pain of wrong. And one of the ways they do this is by a lot of rules, regulations, and don't. They forbid marriage. They require abstinence from foods that God created to be enjoyed. A religion of rules. And the stricter, the better, according to Satan, so that your religion will drive you mad and induce despair. Well, a little bit more. 2 Timothy 4, verses 3 and 4, page 579, a couple pages back. For the time is coming when people will not endure sound teaching, but having itching ears, they will accumulate for themselves teachers to suit their own passions, and will turn away from listening to the truth and wander off into myths. So we might ask, why are there false teachers? Well, one reason, because of Satan, who's active in this world and attempting to deceive people so they won't follow God and truth and find Christ. He has a stake in this, because he's against God and wants to turn everyone possible away from God. So one reason is Satan. But another reason is in this passage, and it's interesting. These people will not endure sound teaching, but they have itching ears, and they will accumulate for themselves teachers to suit their own passions. There are people who have a passion, a lust, for a desire for their own lifestyle. And they're looking for a religion that says it's okay. You can indulge your lust, and God's okay with that. And so they accumulate for themselves teachers to suit their own passions. So they have a license to hunt, so they can live at peace with their sinful desires. And lo and behold, there's false teachers available who teach that, who'll say it's okay. And when they find him, they say, that's the guy. He is the one I believe. This is the kind of Christianity that I embrace, because they want to justify their lusts and lifestyles. A second reason why false teachers are around. And the third one, and we won't, 2 Peter 2, we won't go there. But false teachers have something to gain. It talks about greed. And you've seen the lifestyles of some television personalities who are involved in religion, and they don't live the way we live. Because they've amassed to themselves great fortunes by fleecing those who follow them. So greed is one reason false teachers, or ambition. They want to have image and fame and even sensuality. They often take advantage of their unstable followers. For those reasons, there are false teachers. So just a little appendix here about false teachers. But back to Colossians 2:8, let's sum it up. So look out. Don't be deluded by any version of Christianity that builds on a religious foundation that is not according to Christ. Now, this ice cream comes in many flavors. So we don't want to try to even talk about every specific false teaching, but instead, like Paul, let's focus on the true saving version. According to Christ, we need Christ. So I've tried I suspect many of you have too. I've tried to be good. I've tried to be better. I've tried to make commitments not to return to sin, and then I fail, and then I fall, and then I sin, and I need a Savior, and I need a Redeemer. I need Jesus, and so do you. Jesus, the Son of God, whom God sent, because he knew that though the law is holy, righteous, and good, it fails because we can't keep it. So God sent Jesus, the Son of God, to rescue us from our greatest human dilemma, our addiction to pleasing, to loving, to serving ourselves instead of God. Colossians 1, 19 and 20, for in him all the fullness of God was pleased to dwell, and through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether on earth or in heaven, making peace by the blood of his cross. Peace with my conscience through the blood of the cross. Peace with my God through the blood of the cross. Peace with my fellow man through the blood of the cross. This peace can be yours by coming to Jesus and taking what he has done for sinners as your very own. You can't do enough, be good enough to please God. But you could not do what God through Jesus has done for you. Won't you have him?